I have to check my sound, make sure I'm working and I'm live. I want to start with my candy bar award. It's one of those that we get together with a different management team and we say who is worthy of this outstanding benefit of a candy bar this month. And I know you all totally appreciate it because they come in handy when you have the munchies. This month, it goes to Amber. And let me shake her hand. And the reason it goes to Amber is because of two different projects she's been working on. She's been working on a Mathtacular workbook, which has been kind of a joint project, but she's been the one that's actually been taking the assignments, activities that Dwayne and Luke wrote and putting them in a format that hopefully our children will be able to use. Dwayne and Luke are both off the charts brilliant. So she tried to take the problems and make them more readable for the normal man, and she's done an outstanding job. I'm not sure we totally achieved that, but she's done an outstanding job on working all of the problems and making them as clear as can be. So basically, the purpose of the new Mathtacular video that Luke's been working on for a very long time, just because it's such a challenging and unusual project, is to demonstrate how to do word problems. So the workbook goes with that and takes the word problem that Justin solved on the screen, Justin and Amber solved on the screen, and then they give other examples of how to do that as well. So our kids get some practice in working through the thing that we all remember with such great joy, word problems. And the second thing Amber worked on was not only a brand new product, something we've never done before, which I'm always enthusiastic about putting forth to our customers, but she also looked at an old product that we had carried in the past and said, you know, there's just a lot of really good information in here. Is there a way we could repurpose, reformat, redirect some of those activities? So she worked out our language arts, our old grammar guides that we had done, where we actually take quotes from the books that the kids are reading, and then we have them learn different grammar principles just from what they're actually viewing on the page. So for example, they'll find all the nouns in the passage, or they'll see that the prepositional phrases are here, and then we find the object of the preposition. So Amber went through and cleaned those all up, made them much more attractive than they were, and I think those are even on our shelves already. So congratulations, and thank you, Amber. Appreciate what you do. Barb, if you could hit the play button. I'd like to start with a video, and then I'll have a few thoughts on that afterwards. Oops. Luke, might need help? No.
Cancel that one. Just
to
just
put
play on the YouTube video.
Thanks. Do we have some? Yeah.
Our motivations are unbelievably interesting. I mean, I've been working on this for a few years, and I just find the topic still so amazingly engaging and interesting. So I want to tell you about that. The science is really surprising. The science is a little bit freaky, okay? We are not as endlessly manipulable and as predictable as you would think. There's a whole set of unbelievably interesting studies. I want to give you two that call into question this idea that if you reward something, you get more of the behavior you want. If you punish something, you get less of it. So let's go from London to the mean streets of Cambridge, Massachusetts, in the northeastern part of the United States. And let's talk about a study done at MIT, Massachusetts Technology. Here's what they did. They took a whole group of students, and they gave them a set of challenges. Things like memorizing strings of digits, solving word puzzles, other kinds of spatial puzzles, even physical tasks like throwing a ball through a hoop. Okay, they gave them these challenges and they said to incentivize their performance, they gave them three levels of rewards. Okay, so if you did pretty well, you got a small monetary reward. If you did medium well, you got a medium monetary reward. And if you did really well, if you were one of the top performers, you got a large cash prize. Okay? We've seen this movie before. This is essentially a typical motivation scheme within organizations, right? We reward the very top performers, we ignore the low performers, and the other folks kind of in the middle, okay. They do the test, they have these incentives, here's what they found out. One, as long as the task involved only mechanical skill, bonuses worked as they would be expected. The higher the pay, the better the performance. Okay, that makes sense. But here's what happens. But once the task called for even rudimentary cognitive skill, A larger reward led to poorer performance. Now this is strange, right? A larger reward led to poorer performance? How can that possibly be? Now what's interesting about this is that these folks here who did this are all economists, two at MIT, one at the University of Chicago, one at Carnegie Mellon, okay? Top tier of the economics profession. And they're reaching this conclusion that seems contrary to what a lot of us learned in economics, which is that the higher the reward, the better the performance. And they're saying that once you get above rudimentary cognitive skill, it's the other way around. Which seems like this kind of, the idea that these rewards don't work that way seems vaguely left-wing and socialist, doesn't it? This kind of weird socialist conspiracy. For those of you who have those conspiracy theories, I want to point out the notoriously left-wing socialist group that financed the research, the Federal Reserve Bank. So this is the mainstream of the mainstream coming to a conclusion that's quite surprising, seems to defy the laws of behavioral physics. So this is strange, a strange finding. So what do? They say, this is freaky. Let's go test it somewhere else. Maybe that $50 or $60 prize isn't sufficiently motivating for an MIT student, right? So let's go to a place where $50 is actually more significant relative. Right? So we'll take the experiment, we're gonna go to Madurai, India, rural India, where $50, $60, whatever the number was, is actually a significant sum of money. So they replicated the experiment in India roughly as follows. Small rewards, the equivalent of 2 weeks' salary, small performance, low performance, 2 weeks' salary, medium performance, about a month's salary, high performance, about 2 months' salary. Okay, so those are real good incentives, okay? So you're gonna get a different result here. Well, what happened, though, was that the people offered the medium reward did no better than the people offered the small reward. But this time around, the people offered the top reward, they did worst of all. High incentives led to worst performance. What's interesting about this is that it actually isn't all that anomalous. This has been replicated over and over and over again by psychologists, by some extent by sociologists, and by economists, over and over and over again. For simple, straightforward tasks, those kinds of incentives, if you do this, then you get that, they're great. For tasks that are algorithmic, set of rules where you have to just follow along and get a right answer, if then rewards, carrots and sticks, outstanding. But when the task gets more complicated, when it requires some conceptual creative thinking, those kinds of motivators demonstrably don't work. In fact, money is a motivator at work, but in a slightly strange way. If you don't pay people enough, they won't be motivated. What's curious about, there's another paradox here, which is that the best use of money as a motivator is to pay people enough to take the issue of money off the table. Pay people enough so that they're not thinking about money and they're thinking about the work. Now, once you do that, it turns out there are three factors that the science shows lead to better performance, not to mention personal satisfaction. Autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Autonomy is our desire to be self-directed, to direct our own lives. Now, in many ways, traditional notions of management run afoul of that. Management is great if you want compliance, but if you want engagement, which is what we want in the workforce today as people are doing more complicated, sophisticated things, self-direction is better. Let me give you some examples of this, of almost radical forms of self-direction in the workplace that lead to good results. Let's start with this company right here, Atlassian, an Australian company. It's a software company, and they do something really cool. Once a quarter, on a Thursday afternoon, they say to their developers, for the next 24 hours, you can work on anything you want. You can work on it the way you want. You can work on it with whomever you want. All we ask is that you show the results to the company at the end of those 24 hours in this fun kind of meeting, not a star chamber session, but this fun meeting. Other things like that. It turns out that one day of pure, undiluted autonomy has led to a whole array of fixes for existing software, a whole array of ideas for new products that otherwise had never emerged. One day. Now, this is not an if-then incentive. This is not the sort of thing that I would have done 3 years ago before I knew this research. I would have said, you want people to be creative and innovative? Give them a frickin' innovation bonus. They're not doing this at all. They're essentially saying, you probably want to do something interesting. Let me just get out of your way. One day of autonomy produces things that had never emerged. Now, let's talk about mastery. Mastery is our urge to get better at stuff. We like to get better at stuff. This is why people play musical instruments on the weekend. You have all these people who are acting in ways that seem irrational economically. They play musical instruments on weekends. Why? It's not going to get them a mate. It's not going to make them any money. Why are they doing it? Because it's fun. because you get better at it, and that's satisfying. Go back in time a little bit. I imagine that if I went to my first economics professor, a woman named Mary Alice Shulman, and I went to her in 1983 and said, Mr. Shulman, can I talk to you after class for a moment? Yeah. I got this inkling. I got this idea for a business model. I just want to run it past you. Here's how it would work. You get a bunch of people around the world who are doing highly skilled work, but they're willing to do it for free and volunteer their time, 20, sometimes 30 hours a week. Okay, she's looking at you somewhat skeptically there. Oh, but I'm not done. And then what they create, they give it away rather than sell it. It's going to be huge. I mean, she truly would have thought it was. Okay, keep it flying in the face of so many things. But what do you have? You have Linux powering 1 out of 4 corporate servers in Fortune 500 companies, Apache powering more than the majority of web servers, Wikipedia. What's going on? Why are people doing this? Why are these people, many of whom are technically sophisticated, highly skilled people who have jobs? Okay, they have jobs. They're working at jobs for pay, doing sophisticated technological work, and yet during their limited discretionary time, they do equally, if not more, technically sophisticated work, not for their employer, but for someone else for free. That's a strange economic behavior. Economists who look into it, why are they doing this? It's overwhelmingly clear. Challenge and mastery, along with making a contribution. That's it. What you see more and more is the rise of what you might call the purpose motive, is that more and more organizations want to have some kind of transcendent purpose, partly because it makes coming to work better, partly because that's the way to get better talent. And what we're seeing now is, in some ways, when the profit motive becomes unmoored from the purpose motive, bad things happen. Bad things ethically sometimes, but also bad things just like not good stuff, like crappy products, like lame services, like uninspiring places to work. That when the profit motive is paramount, or when it becomes completely unhitched from the purpose motive, it just, people don't do great things. More and more organizations are realizing, and sort of disturbing the categories between what's profit and what's purpose. And I think that actually heralds something interesting. And I think that the companies that, organizations that are flourishing, whether they're profit, for profit, or somewhere in between, are animated by this purpose. But let me give you a couple of examples. Here's the founder of Skype. He says, our goal is to be disruptive, but in the cause of making the world a better place. Pretty good purpose. Here's Steve Jobs. Only want to put a ding in the universe. All right? That's the kind of thing that might get you up in the morning racing to go to work. So I think that that we are purpose maximizers, not only profit maximizers. I think the science shows that we care about mastery very, very deeply. And the science shows that we want to be self-directed. And I think that the big takeaway here is that if we start treating people like people and not assuming that they're simply horses, you know, slower, smaller, better smelling horses. If we get past this kind of ideology of carrots and sticks and look at the science, I think we can actually build organizations and work lives that make us better off, but I also think they have the promise to make our world just a little bit better.
And that's the end. I don't know how we turn that off. Just leave it. Sounds good. Very, very entertaining video. And when I saw it, I thought, wow, I think I'd like to talk about that. What happened was I was talking with Luke the other day, and I said, oh, I think I'd like to talk about what Sunlight is such a great place to work at. And he looked at me and said, oh, well, like at the 20th anniversary luncheon and a few other times, and I thought, I have a reason behind this. So let me unpack a little bit about what I saw in this very entertaining video. Boy, I wish I could draw that fast and that well. motivation. Why is it important? I think when we come to work, we want to be able to do our very best job, and from the video, it sounds like unless we're motivated, we're probably not going to do that. Second reason we want to be motivated is because it's really the best thing for our customers. We aren't doing this in a vacuum. We're doing this for a particular people group, people who entrust the education of their children to us. So I think we want to make sure we're always motivated to do our best for them. When I saw that money needs to be off the table, it's a motivator in a strange way, only if people aren't always worrying about money. When I talked to you in the past, I've talked about how we look at the standards that are out there. We want money to be a non-issue. Lord willing, that's true, and we've been as careful as we can be with that. We want it to be off the table, so you don't have to focus on that. I liked the way you talked about to autonomy. As I look particularly at our more creative teams and that type of thing, I think personally we leave a lot of autonomy. I liked his idea of once a quarter letting people do whatever they want. I think that could be a very interesting and fun experiment to try, and maybe that's in our future. But to say, what would you like to work on? What would you like to throw your heart into? I'm here to say that that's probably what we try to do here. We probably do more, I'll leave that to our management team, but it's something to be thinking about. Are you autonomous in the things that you do? Maybe we need to do a little bit better job of reporting. I don't think we want to have a party where we have the beer and the cake and everybody's going la la la, but to have people come and say, these are the types of things I'm working on and this is the progress I'm making, I think that could be a useful tool for us to use. And he talked about mastery, that we all have a desire in our heart to grow better and better in those types of things. I think we do that here as well. I know for a number of years we funded people going to class. I think we have cut back on some of that, but I think if you have a legitimate class that you'd like to take or a training, something you'd like to do, or you think there's a skill set you think your department needs, I'd really recommend you talk to your manager and present your case. And I think that there's probably a lot of ways where we want to help you improve and become more of a master at the things that you do. The final thing that I thought was so strategic about this video was that it talks about we want to make a difference. We want to have a strong purpose in the things that we do. And where this all came from, why I even thought I wanted to talk about this, was I was sitting one day in my chair thinking, I just have the greatest job on earth. I can't imagine having a job where you get to impact 40,000 kids a year, where you get to encourage kids to read books, where you get to encourage parents to sit down and spend time with their children. You get to encourage strong family ties. So my dream for you would be that you'd go home and say, boy, I work at a great company and I love what I do. And may it be that that's where we all live. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Good questions, yep. It's totally clear, huh?
Thank you.
Thank you.